it is. It's basketball. It's not a fucking soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Today on the podcast, my guest is Bo Estes from NBA TV, NBA.com, and the LD Mobile NBL Top 10s.
Dancing like a rabbit in a wolf's den as he weaves past the defenders to put this one in, and after the matter, he adds a little chatter, a little and one fun for Jerome Randall.
But before we go any further, a reminder, rate, review, and subscribe. You all know the drill at this point. That's part of the podcast playbook. You're not allowed to have a podcast without saying rate, review, and subscribe. Let's jump into this. So this is an episode for future sportscasters or reporters with aspirations both on camera and off. Bo and I, we talk about the nuts and bolts process of how he does his job, from preparation, vocal exercises, scripting, performance, confidence, etc. We break down word for word how he wrote, what I feel are some of his best and therefore the best uses of narration this NBL 20 season. Then we chat about the past, present, and future of sports highlights and sports content. We talk about what Bo likes about the current style of highlights, the countdown ranking style, and perhaps how that style could morph and change in the future. We also talk about The Last Dance, the documentary, and its lack of a narrator. We talk about that modern stylistic change and how that impacts upon Bo and things going forward. A word beforehand jumping into this. In this interview, Bo talks about suffering from clanging, or perhaps suffering from clanging. I'll describe it to you, and you tell me after listening to the interview whether or not you think Bo has it. Clanging is a mode of speech characterized by the association of words based upon sound rather than concepts. For example, this may include compulsive rhyming or alliteration without apparent logical connection between words. It is often apparent in sufferers of mania and schizophrenia. Now, I don't know if Bo has clanging or if a person can be mildly clangingly challenged, but I'll leave that to you after listening to Bo and going and searching his highlights, and you tell me and you decide. Lastly, before we jump into this, following on from a conversation on the Cam Luke podcast featuring Felix von Hoff and Peter Hawley, they had a discussion on that podcast about how many points they would think Andrew Gaze would score or average in today's NBL. It generated a pretty animated response, and it got me thinking, how good was Andrew Gaze really? I only caught the tail end of his career, and he won a number of MVPs. You know, was he the NBL GOAT? Is that undisputed? Was he a product of the times that wouldn't translate? As I said, I only caught the tail end of his career and have watched a few replays. I mean, he's a seven-time MVP, but only two championships. Is that a bad correlation? Nonetheless, I thought, let's go to the source. So I brought Buddy Nodge. We had the discussion, and Buddy Nodge and I, we broke it down. And that conversation about Andrew Gaze will be coming out this Thursday. But right now, it's NBA's Bo Estes.
My first question, Bo, is a pretty square one, but do you do any vocal exercises to warm up before you do your voiceover?
It's funny. I don't really, but I do find myself getting in and out of practice, if you know what I'm saying, like an athlete that gets out of shape or something like that. If at the start of a season, the highlights come a little bit easier to me because the pacing is such that I don't feel like I'm ever really chasing the play or trying to slow down for the next play. So that's easy, but when it comes to those top 10s, I get out of practice. I really do, and I have to train myself. And there's times, like you said, you have to maintain your voice. I know, you know, people like Marv Albert are really serious about maintaining their vocal cords and stuff like that. I haven't reached that point yet. When I get sick, I deal with that for sure, but it's not to that point yet. I think the big thing for me is staying in practice far as announcing highlights and doing stuff like that. It's so critical for me. And with us being out of the game right now, I was thinking about it the other day. I'm going to be terrible. I'm going to be just terrible when I come back. It's going to be a week or two. I always have the preseason to get back into shape. I'm not going to have that this time.
I find one exercise I really find helpful is I pretend I'm eating a great big hamburger. Like I really push my mouth all ways. And I find that because otherwise I slip on like peas. I slur words together sometimes.
Sure,
That's one that really helps me. But I read that in a book.
I'll tell you what. There. So she may not be famous in Australia, but there's an announcer here named Erin Andrews. And Erin and I used to work together at TBS before she became really famous going on to Fox. And what she told me that she did is she, like that, bit her tongue before. And I, like, there are times, like, so I do mainly like the highlights with NBA.com and some on-camera stuff with the NBA. And if I feel like, okay, this is going to be particularly complicated, I will remind myself to do that. And I don't know why, but it does seem to work. It really does seem to help you enunciate. It helps with clarity. So it's not really, I guess it's not a vocal exercise, but it really is a technique that I've used in the past. And if I'm struggling with something, I'll use it as well.
Right. Okay. I'll remember that. The next one, pretty square question. And I have read your interview with, who was it? Or somewhere online. How do you come up with your rhymes, your metaphors, your similes? Do you keep a little Rolodex, like a little notepad that you rhymed on?
That's funny because it's developed over time. For the longest time, it was straight ad lib for the longest time, really? Which is crazy. Oh yeah, yeah.
That surprises me to hear that.
So no, there was this online interview. I can't remember what the name of the group is, but it's a literary review magazine. And somehow they landed on my top 10s. It's the Kenyan Literary Review. And they landed on my top 10s. And the guy, he liked it a lot, but he said he thinks I suffer from something called clanging, where everything rhymes in my mind. And I just did it there. And it does. It,
clining. Like it, is that it, a name clanging. You've come up with, or clanging. Is that a... That's an actual thing.
I think it's a technical term, but it haunts my wife in our regular life. And I just did it again. Just the way my mind works, is that I get to something and then I stamp it at the end with the next. So if it's almost like if you were a rapper, it would be like cheating. It'd be like steroids for a rapper. Like it's a mental steroid, but, I just think I was born that way in a weird sense. But then you're right. Like later it became, I would say something during my everyday life. And I was like, ooh, that's really good. I've got to remember that. So on my iPhone right here, there's a notes. Yeah. And I'll have, so some of my best stuff, it's 50-50, but some of my best stuff I think comes from that. More of the metaphor stuff, I'd say.
Okay. Are you much of a reader? Like, do you read poetry? Are you more of a read poetry?
Oh, I read everything. Like, just now, honest to God, 30 minutes before I got on the phone with you, I was reading a Mark Twain book, and he was in Australia.
Australia. Yeah.
So it's interesting. I don't necessarily just make it my practice to read books about Australia or anything, but it just happened to work out that way. I read a fair amount. I'm not, you know, a book every 3 days or anything like that, but I do read a fair amount.
This is how square I am. There's a really good book and I would recommend it to you. It's by Stephen Fry, who's English. He does QI and he's just a very whimsical sort of comedic character.
Sure.
He wrote a book called The Ode Less Traveled, which is about how to write poetry. But sort of a book you can carry in your front pocket. It really, really travels well. That's one that, like, do you ever read anything that's like practical about building wordsmith or wordplay?
I need to do that more. I don't because, and what happens is I feel like I occasionally run into a wall, a creative wall. And I think everybody who does that sort of creative stuff does it and you want to break out. And there are days, honestly, where I feel like this is unbelievable. I can't do much better than this. And then there are days where I feel like I'm delivering quadruplets, where it's never going to happen. Right. It's never going to work. And the thing is, so with my job with the NBL is a little different than my job with the NBA. In our work approach, the NBL just has stuff done earlier, so I can spend a little more time with it. The NBA, it gets done, and I have to turn it around in 5 to 10 minutes. I just have to just immediately go, which is why a lot of it was ad lib. And then, you know, as much as I can just jam something out really quick, I do. But when you get going that quickly, I feel like I don't want to repeat myself, but also I can't give birth to a new album every night. Right. So, I mean, it's there's sort of a balance. There's a job because there's other people, as you know, that are depending on you to get this stuff out.
Do you find like you're better with the ad-lib? Because I think it's like Jeff Buckley, the musician, he talks about how like, it's kind of like a sportsman. It almost comes naturally when you're tired and it's late in the game and it's your only objective. It makes it easier. Do you find that the ad-lib like kind of sparks for you? Or?
Yes, no, especially it's one of those things where when you get going, it's almost like you have to build up to it. And so when I get to play eight, typically, I'm good. I'm rolling. I'm fine. Yeah, yeah. Because it's like 10 and 9 are like, you know, starting to run. And once I get going, I'm fine. And I know what's coming. So whatever I'm saying that's coming out of my mouth, my mind's probably a sentence or two ahead, right. I think. I don't think that I'm thinking about what I'm saying. I think I'm considering what's next. And I prefer the ad-lib. I honestly do. My favorite one I've ever done was ad-lib. Yeah. My absolute favorite. I knew what I was going to say. Like, if you look at the top five, I think it was like May 5th, 2nd, something like that, 2016. If you look at it, the number one was my favorite. But I knew I was getting to that the whole time. So it was getting up to that was the challenge for me.
Right. I guess it's kind of like the King's Speech. Like, if you've seen that film where he has trouble reading, kind of conversing conversation. I think when you're reading it off a paper, it changes the timbre almost. It can be different.
Well, I don't know how you do it. So when I'm set up, I have my computer basically here in front of me.
Real close?
We used to... pretty close. Yeah, pretty close because I'm old and my eyes are shut. And then my microphone is to the left, and between my microphone and the computer is whatever the plays are. If I've written a script, if I've not, I know what's, you know, it's just like you have a shot sheet or whatever. So it's 10 through 1, and I know. So I'm never on camera, so I can be doing that and that and that
right,
and that.
Right,
so
right.
Referencing the video is your timing mechanism. And then over here is your script. So it's at this point, it's second nature.
Do you like to stand or sit?
Sit.
And do you move your arms a lot? Are you quite physically animated, or is it all between the eyes and the chin?
I think honestly, when I'm doing on camera, I'm more animated. Like if I'm hosting something for NBA TV, I'm more like this. When I'm doing the top 10, I don't think I'd move at all. I really do. I think my movement is here. I think that's about it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Seated just like this. Now, like I said, it used to be that I would go down to our studios at NBA TV, and I would go in a proper voiceover booth, and I would be in the newsroom, and there would be 50, 75 people around me, and we'd all be jamming this out. Yeah. But what I found out is that, you know, first of all, the technical breakdowns, it just turns out that using a USB mic and a computer, there's no technical problems. It's so much simpler than a voiceover booth that's patched throughout a huge networks building, and those patches break. The simpler, the better. And I can get my work done without hassling anybody. They don't have to stop. It just works better if I'm at home.
Yeah. Another daggy question, but do you do anything to improve or preserve your voice? We kind of spoke about it before, but I know Nat King Cole used to smoke a pack of Cool's menthol cigarettes a day to get the velvet tone. Is there anything that you found has matured or improved your voice over time or preserved it?
What's interesting, I far be it for me to correct Nat King Cole, but
it worked for him.
I don't smoke a pack a day, but I what I do notice, if I go back and listen to something, I've been on camera and doing like hosting or reporting or stuff for 20 something years, and I sound like a kid when I was 26, 27, 28. Yeah, right. Not that I sound, I hope I don't sound old now, but I do think I have a better control of my voice. I know how to use the instrument better. There are people that are light years better than me. My wife is a senior producer at CNN, and in an emergency, they've used me for voiceovers for commercials on CNN and stuff like that. Yeah. And you can tell it's an emergency because I'm not as good as, you know, when Morgan Freeman gets on or something that. They're just, it's just another, well, those people that do that have a talent that I don't. I'm a highlights guy or a sports guy. Like if you need a sports feature voice, I can do that. But when it comes to what those people do, that's a different town. It really is.
Have you got any real role models? Like, I'm thinking sort of like Don LaFontaine from the 90s movie trailers. Like, is there anyone like that who really you're like, wow, that's, he's in a league of his own?
Well, what's interesting is I went out and there's this agency in America called the William Morris Agency. I think they're worldwide. So they had me in Beverly Hills, and they had me reading commercials and stuff like that. And you go in there with some of the pros, and you see, like, okay, that's a different level. Yeah. As far as my role models in sports casting, what's interesting is I don't even know if he's known in Australia, but there's a guy named Craig Kilborn who used to be a famous sports center anchor on ESPN here. And then he blew up so big that he got the show after David Letterman.
Like the late show. So,
yeah. So he was the show after that James Corden had.
Oh, he had quite a sort of, he had a voice that was quite sort of, he was kind of curt. That's probably not the right word, but he was quite sarcastic-y.
So he was a wonderful sportscaster.
Is he an old school? Is he the guy, if you've seen
a little bit? Yeah.
That's him. Okay. Old school.
So what's interesting is just through mutual friends, we've got to hang out at his house in Hollywood one night. Right, and it was amazing, an absolutely unbelievable night. But he's a super cool guy, but he literally just retired. And people thought, like, he's 48, he's 49, he just retired. And, you thought he's going to come back in a year or two. He just didn't. He's done. He's absolutely done. He's one of those guys that said, I'm going to retire young, and did it. And he's out of the business. He really is.
Wow.
But he was definitely a guy that influenced me as a broadcaster. And what I would say is, in college, my senior thesis in college was, and it was based on, sort of those guys on ESPN, how they worked. How does a broadcaster get their personality into their broadcast? And my conclusion was, you have to develop credit over time. You have to be accurate. And then you can start putting your personality into it. And now, like, if you look at my top tens, for God's sake, it's not even me, really. It's some character. It's like Will Ferrell and Ron Burgundy or something. I don't know.
The guy I compare you to, and this is a favorite one, is Kevin Calabro. You know, the former host, voice of the Celtics. I get with your inflection, when you go up into quite a high octave, you've got that same, not gravelly is probably not the right word, but you've got a certain, like, it's got a real hit to it. Like, do you know him? Is he like?
Sure. I've met him. Oh, wow. Yeah, those people are really impressive to me. I have thought about, I do some play-by-play for summer league and stuff like that. And that's a career path that I probably could have taken. And it's interesting. I am happy now, particularly, and not just in this moment, but I don't want to travel for, 300,000 miles a year. When I was young and I was doing feature producing for Turner Sports, I remember I was in 28 cities in 30 nights. And it's flights. They're all flights around the country. Yeah. And I just remember waking up in a hotel and my phone rang at 6 a.m. and a producer said, "Hey, Bo, where are you today?" And I didn't know. And I just remember, that's it, man. I ended up being in Indianapolis for a Pacers game. But wow. I didn't know, and I had to look at the hotel stationery to figure out where I was. And I was just like, that's very tough.
That is a lot. Let's change tact. What do you think the future of highlights and viral content is? At the moment, the appetite seems to be for countdowns. I think that's what generates a bit of – because obviously it's not just the highlight, although that's very important. It's also sort of the conversation you can generate online. They seem to be relatively linked. Where do you see the future?
I think countdowns really get traction, honest to God. Like, if you even consider it, it's the ranking thing, right? In America, and I don't know if it's global, but, like, who's the GOAT, Jordan or LeBron?
It's big now, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That fills up so much content.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's ridiculous how much content. I could go propose, hey, we should talk about LeBron versus Jordan as jump shooters and how that makes this person the GOAT. You could do a 10-minute segment on it. We could do it right now, and people will go crazy for that. So the ranking, we see the numbers for the top 10 And it's astounding. It's absolutely, and I didn't realize it till maybe 6-7 years ago that things were trending that way. And then I started to stack my efforts that way. I said, let's put my effort into what people want. I'm involved with a course called Sports Business Classroom. That's where, in fact, I met some of the NBL folks like Liv Santamaria and folks like that. Sure. I met them out at Summer League in Vegas. But we're developing a curriculum now for the future of being in sports media, and a lot of it is what will people want to consume. And right now, if you look at it, it's the ranking, it's the comparisons, who's better. One of the things that came out of this Last Dance was a lot of people talking about Isaiah Thomas and where does Isaiah Thomas rank in the all-time point guard discussion? Okay, Magic Johnson's number one. Is Steph number two? Is Isaiah Thomas number two?
Wow.
It just, that ranking and that debate really seems to engage people right now. And look, I'd love to dig deeper personally. I would. But if this is what people want, this is what we have to deliver.
I mean, and that's where I look at something like, speaking of Kevin Colabro, like if you look at the Sean Kemp highlight from NBA Superstars 2, where it's paired up with Pearl Jam, that's probably as good as a highlight package as I have ever seen in any sport anywhere. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yes, and I'll tell you, that is, those sort of highlights, I think, got me my career I have. I really mean that. Because when I was a kid, I'll tell you a story. I grew up in Southern California when I was younger. The Lakers won their first championship with Magic Johnson in 1980. And I still remember after they won that championship, there was this thing called On TV, which is not a thing anymore, but it was a thing then. And they had a montage of Magic Johnson to the old song, Do You Believe in Magic? And it hit me. I never forgot it. And then in the 80s, the NBA came up with those commercials that were like, the NBA is fantastic. And they're like these one-on-one videos. They're playing that Hall & Oates song, one-on-one, and it's this fantastic moves by Michael Jordan. And it hit me, and it really made me. So when I came to high school, I knew what I wanted to do. I didn't need a guidance counselor. I didn't need anything. That my life was set, and it was because of stuff like that. And I really think those influenced me in a way that still hits me today. I absolutely love them. I'd love to see more.
Yeah, no, I think they're really good. I think, and that was my idea for the future going forward, like, sports and music. It's not a concept that's blowing anything out of the water, but a remarriage, because it's really countdown oriented, and it's the push for factual, like, you know, top 10, bang bang bang, you're writing them down. The push has gone away from artistic, where it's like, Sean Kemp and Pearl Jam, peas and carrots. It just works. You get that when you get that mix just right. So my thing is, as well, is pick the music tastes, like, set these, and this might sound ridiculous, but set these highlights to country, jazz, indie music, 80s pop, you know, Casper Baby Pants for the kids, you know, whatever, to see what, because if you make a wide range of them, a little bit of something for everyone.
I think the challenge with that is, digitally it may be a little bit different. I think it's a rights issue for like NBA TV or something like that. And then a budgeting issue, because... when I used to do like feature producing, I would put any song I wanted to, because we're on TNT and we have enough money to, buy Fort Knox or whatever. We got all the money in the world, so it didn't matter. But now the budgets get a little tighter. It costs a little more to include a song. So that's a challenge. But I think online and digitally, it's a little bit different. And I think you can work it. I mean, there's some stuff. I'm a big North Carolina basketball fan. And there's some stuff from the old Vince Carter, Antoine Jameson teams where they're playing like Machine Head from Bush. And it's like, I watch that still every couple months. I love it. Right. I absolutely love it. So, yeah, if you can work out the rights of that, I would love to see that. I'd watch it every day. They'd probably take my job away. I'd like it so much.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I just look at those, I think, wow, they could come back in a new form. And if you could cut some kind of deal with Apple Podcasts and iTunes and artists and emerging artists even, and get a few hits, you know. And it's kind of like, I compare it to like a renaissance, kind of like when, this is even before my time, but I've heard it and talked about it in TV, a show like Miami Vice. You know,
when
I started using pop music in a way that was very unique and like full songs. If you've seen that sequence to Phil Collins, stuff like
100%. I grew up with that. Yeah. In the Air Tonight. It was fantastic. Sure. Yeah. It was absolutely amazing. And so, yeah, I think that is, and the rights may be different in Australia. It mm-hmm. may just be different and that you guys would have more opportunity to do something like that. But gosh, I would love to see that. Yeah. And what's going to be an interesting challenge. We have this guy, Drew Watkins, who's like a VP at Turner Sports. And if you ever go back and look, when the NBA came out of their last labor dispute, he produced the best NBA commercial, I think people agree, I've ever seen, that many people have ever seen. And it's
which one's that? Live
For, if you look it up on YouTube, it's NBA Live Forever. And so you have to think as a producer, I have to strike the right tone because there's been this disagreement. And so fans are upset because they missed their basketball. So you have to figure out what's going to be the right tone. If you go back and look at NBA Live Forever, it will blow your mind. It's so good because he was able to, and this is 8 years old editing techniques. So it could be even better now, but somebody is going to be tasked when we come out of this whole COVID-19 thing with putting an open together and setting the right tone. And what's that tone going to be? And that's going to be a huge challenge, I think.
One ad that really stuck in my mind is the one where LeBron James said, I'm not your hero, or what was it? I'm not your role model. No, not your role model. Where he's like, what do I do next? Where he's like clearing the decks with the floor and the photo of him coming down in Cleveland when he just moved to Miami that first time.
Sure.
That was one that I thought, when you talk about tone, I don't know if it hit the right tone. It seemed to anger a lot of people, but it was very daring. The originality and the daringness of it, if you remember that one, was something.
Yeah, I do. And I think Nike's done a really good job with LeBron. I really do. I know the guy that used to be in charge of all that. He was the old director of basketball at Nike, and I think they did some wonderful stuff. And it was a lot of effort that went into that, and it was a lot of thought that went
into
that.
And it seemed to come and go pretty quick. People just didn't have the response they either wanted or thought it would have, and it was gone.
Yeah, I think the other thing that Nike did well, their career, their relationship with Kobe was great too, I think. Mm. And I think continues to be great with his family. And so I think Nike really, I mean, obviously everything sits behind what they did with Jordan, but they really are brilliant in their marketing.
Let's change tact. I want to talk about the NBL stuff. So, and this is one of my favorites from this season from you. Top 10 dunks. This was number 6. I'm going to read it out for you, which is always embarrassing to hear stuff read back at you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sure.
You go, here's how it goes. At 6, it's the veteran, the legend, Andrew Bogut, bringing more crunch than a crouton as he goes busting through, as he goes busting through one on Adelaide. Sydney's King just hammered this thing right on top of Eric Griffin, who goes home wishing he'd stayed down on Bogut's airborne mission. If you can, like, take people through when you get that highlight, the steps all the way through to laying that one down.
Okay, so obviously Andrew Bogut's a legend. Over there. And, you know, even here, I think it's fair to say. So I want to pay homage to that and that he's still doing it. So that's my original thought is, okay, I have to include that somehow. And then so what I do is what I always do is I watch the play originally and I see how viscerally it hits me. Like, what happened? How do I feel when that happened? It's pacing too, because I think crunch like a crouton as he goes busting through on you. So it's the inflection, it's the pacing, and you have to hit all of that as well. On the NBA, probably I make it less complex than I do on the NBL because I just have more time with it on the NBL. Right. But so there's a couple of parts to that one. There's the crouton and the busting through on, and then you have to hit them all every single time. You have to keep going through. It's complex. What was beyond the crouton and busting through on?
Sydney's King just hammered this thing right on top of Eric Griffin, who goes home wishing. So that alliteration of hammer this thin thing, Griffin, wishing, airborne mission. That's four. That's great.
On my sheet, I have Sydney Kings.
Yeah.
And so I just take that and make Sydney's King. Yeah, sure. So I move the apostrophe essentially, but it makes it easy. Yeah. And so how do I rhyme with King? That's pretty easy. Hammers this thing, and then Griffin Duncan Mission's a little more complex. But yeah, so that one didn't take long at all. Yeah. That's there's nothing to that one.
Have you got sort of words that you hook onto? That I think if you hear
you sure.
Yeah, like mission, detonation, these are ones that you like that end in a way that normally works for you.
Yeah, and I'd like to honestly get rid of them if I could.
Yeah.
Because your mind naturally attaches to something it's done before. So I you know, there are ones that I used to say southpaw spike.
Yep.
A lot. Yep. For a left-handed jam. And I try to get away from that, but it's still right. And then, you know, like... Hmm. It's not like you're going to listen to a play-by-play announcer say dunk different every single time. You know, it is what it is. That's the play. You're describing the play at the heart of it. If you go away from describing the play, then you're doing it wrong. But yeah, so I would say southpaw spike in flight or whatever it would be. And then it became southpaw SWAT for a left-handed block. You know, you just
sure.
I guess the challenge is to break that. Honestly, that's the biggest writing challenge and the biggest announcing challenge is to break out of that pattern so you don't get stuck in a rut.
Yeah, you can definitely get, especially if you're doing long form reporting, you can really get into, if you wanted to just knock sure. them out real quick, you could have a formula that will work 99% of the time.
Yeah.
We talked about confidence. You got to deliver this thing stuff with confidence. How do you develop it? Some days you just wouldn't have it. I'm sure we all do. Sometimes you just don't. How do you manufacture that confidence? And also, do you deliver this voiceover with people around you? Kind of like, look, who's this guy with? Or are you by yourself?
So I'll take the second part first. It used to be people around me. It used to be, you know, people would, because what happens, I'm sure you know, with a voiceover booth, you're in the booth, but there are editors in a newsroom that have you potted up. So they're hearing, and then more people are hearing because I'm just super loud, you know, unnecessarily loud. But in any case, yeah, so people heard me. In fact, my favorite one, whenever that one was, like May 2nd, 2016, whatever it was, I remember coming out and people were like excited. That's when I knew.
Do you enjoy the crowd? Do you enjoy having the crowd?
Yeah. I used to, I was the PGA announcer at the British Open at Carnoustie years ago.
Okay.
And like, I did this stand up in front of a restaurant and the people, it was great. The Scottish people were like harassing me. You'll never get it. You'll never get it. You'll never get it. And so I went up there and got it. And the whole, like the wonderful fans just started cheering and going crazy. And I raised my hand. I loved it. I fed off of it. It was
right, okay.
It's almost like if you played sports growing up, you love a challenge. Sure. I loved it. But yeah, so I enjoyed that crowd aspect of it for sure. What was the first part of your question?
And then this first part was, how do you manufacture confidence? Like, do you there's a thing called Toastmasters in Australia, which is like a little group that gets together and you work on your public speaking.
Yeah.
Do you do stuff that's that, purpose built or are you naturally confident?
Yeah, it's going to sound wrong if I say that right. No, I have confidence in my ability to do my job. Yep. For sure. And I think
even starting out,
that's the challenge, right? Yeah. Because when I was younger, I don't think I had the same confidence. I think it's something that you develop over time. I know I can do the job now. I know for sure I can do it. But wow. When I was younger, my very first stand-up I ever did was for a high school sports show, on television at least. And I wrote it the night before and I said it 10,000 times
really?
In the mirror
really?
Before I got there. Yeah. And so I went out to the shoot, and I just went blah 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 blah. Dropped the mic, walked away. Thought I nailed it. It sounded like a robot. And he was like, "Do you want to come back and try to say it more naturally and stuff like that?" And it threw me. It really threw me because I thought I'm just going to walk in and I'm going to be Bob Costas and I'll never need any help and it'll be perfect. And it wasn't that way. Ernie Johnson's a big mentor for me. And he really, one of the things he told me to do, and it was a really crucial suggestion. Ernie said to me, write what you think is going to be perfect. Take that, throw it away. Then do something else and try that. And it really turned out that that was useful because it forces you out of your comfort zone. And he's just been a wonderful friend throughout my career. He's as nice a guy in person as he seems on TV.
Okay. Right.
But yeah, he's been, I can call him anytime. I can call, if I'm questioning something, I can call him. And at this point, I don't feel like I need to as much, but sometimes it's just wonderful to do it just to talk with him.
This was one that I like. This is from NBL 19. He said, at number 9, it's Adelaide's Jacob Wiley flying amongst the constellation to rock this detonation. It's the Coyote from Sobe 1 Kenobi using the force, of course, holding the of course. When you do the NBL, if there's an audience around, are they looking at you like, who's the Coyote? Who's Wiley? Because they wouldn't know the players so much. Are they like, what on earth is going on over there?
You mean Australian fans or American fans?
When you're recording it, when you're recording the NBL in your Atlanta studio.
No, I mean, I think what's funny is my friend circle now is like, what in the world is this? And the good side of this is I think I've gotten a little bit of interest in the NBL locally here. I think people are watching it now. But yeah, the player, people, so I'm a North Carolina basketball fan, like I mentioned. People know who Bryce Cotton is because Bryce Cotton was a nightmare for the North Carolina Tar Heels to deal with. Yeah. So they know that name, but Sobe 1 Kenobi. You know what's funny is Jacob and I follow each other on Twitter now, and we developed a little bit of a relationship. He's a wonderful guy. But yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of these names that people don't know. There's a lot of these people that, you know, who are these people? And I, you know, one thing I have to give credit to is there's a guy named Darren Barker at the NBL.
Yep.
And he's really helpful in giving me ideas and stuff to bounce off of. Right. So yeah, I, you know, it's a team effort that goes into all of this. It really is. And I hope people understand it's not, you know, just one guy out here. Like in your case, maybe, I mean, you're more of a one man band than I am. There's a lot of people that help me out.
I want to talk about accents. So obviously I have an Australian accent. Do you ever change your accent or adopt an accent even from like within the United States? Obviously you got like a Boston thing or an inflection or accent. Do you ever like take and choose words on like Owen Wilson pronounces words in a very fun and interesting way? Do you ever kind of steal from him? I think, well, that's an interesting way he pronounces that word. Or do you ever take from things like that?
What's funny is I live in Georgia, right? And I have family from Georgia. So Georgia is what we call a Southern accent.
Yeah, sure.
And my wife claims that I will have a Southern accent when I talk to my grandparents.
Right.
But I don't think I do. I think there are words that to get to the rhyme, I have to use an accent. In Boston, they say park the car, which is not park the car. So it allows you some creative choices if you involve that accent. And then it would have to be with a certain team that you could get away with it. So I don't think it's necessarily something I do often, but if I can use it, I think it's an effective tool.
Have you ever gone too far? Like, I think I read in an article, where was it? I want to give these guys credit. I've forgotten. I'll bring it up later, but you talked like Jan Mahimi was one with the Michael Jackson thing. Have you ever gone too far? You've gotten feedback that you've gone too far or?
I think I have. And so what I do is I tend to push it because I'll say something that is so ridiculous that I'm like, no way is anybody going to like this. I tend to get a lot of positive feedback on YouTube. I really do. The people are just wonderful to me. And I'm like, well, they're going to kill me for this stupid thing I'm about to say. And then what tends to happen is the more ridiculous thing I say, the more people like it.
I bring this up because in one of my packages one time, it was Bournemouth versus Norwich in the EPL. James Ward-Prowse is a striker. He scored twice from the corner kicks. And I was like, oh, corner. I was like, oh, Dirty Dancing. Nobody puts baby in the corner. So I said, nobody puts baby in the, this is my line. I got not in trouble for this, but sort of like, you're flirting with the line here. So nobody puts baby in the corner unless that baby is James Ward-Prowse scoring twice from the set shot with some fancy footwork as the Cherries Dirty Dance their way to a 2-0 lead. That was my line. You had to, and they were like, you got to know Dirty Dancing. We didn't. And yeah. So I had to sit in front of my, you know, my superiors, four or five of them, explaining like the plot of Dirty Dancing. So they got this line. And
did they bring you in? Did they want to talk to you about it?
Not also, in any, okay. not in a real finger wagging, but like in a sort of like, all right, this needs a bit. We need to talk about
yourself.
This. Yeah.
Explain yourself.
You've never had that moment.
So I'll tell you the truth. As this NBA top 10 thing grew into whatever viral thing it's become, yeah. I think my bosses were like, it almost grew before they could say, hey, what are you doing?
Right. It became your thing more than theirs. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so like it was, if they wanted to turn it off, it was almost too late. I mean, look, they could still turn it off. They could say, Bo, shut up anytime they want to. But I think it became successful enough and the NBA liked it enough. The league liked it enough. And you know, they like it because it's getting such positive feedback and engagement and everything like that, that it sort of happened before they could have a thought one way or the other. There's probably a line. I'm sure there's a line out there somewhere that I can't get to. What I tend not to do is I'll never really criticize players. I don't want to make it personal. Usually what I'll try to do is I'll try to accentuate the positive of what a player did on a play. And I don't make it personal that a player failed. If somebody gets dunked on, they get dunked on, right? But I'm not going to say they're a fool for getting dunked on or whatever, right. Something like that. But so those are the lines I sort of set out for myself, and hopefully I don't ever break them. The Jan Mahimi thing is pure silliness. I mean, I don't know. People really liked it, and it was just pure silliness. And I've noticed, I've done this long enough that players are going in and out of their career now, right? So Jan is not quite as frequent on the top 10. So now I don't get to use it as much, which is a little disappointing because at some point I like saying it. I would say, here's another choice, DeMarcus Cousins. I would say, don't blame it on the sunshine. Don't blame it on the moonlight. Don't blame it on the good times. Blame it on the boogie for Boogie Cousins. And it was a Michael Jackson line. And then I started thinking, well, should I say Michael Jackson stuff? I don't know if
people said.
I don't know. And, you know, the best thing probably to do is do what you feel and use your best judgment. And then if somebody calls you into the office and wags their finger at you, you back off. But, you know, I just did what I thought felt right. And Cousins has been out for a while now, so I haven't had opportunity to use it. So I'll see if I go back to it or not.
Talking about like negativity and stuff, like Shaqt and the Fool, like I have a love-hate relationship with that where I'm like, I do enjoy the content. You know, there's a little, that sort of schadenfreude part of me that's like, I enjoy seeing the, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, it's in its nature negative. Tough line to walk, as you said. Stand-up comedy, I want to talk to you about. When you come up with a line, do you ever bounce it off someone? Like, you know, like a stand-up comedian might have a joke, he bounces off a few crowds, like, oh, that got
sure.
Nothing. Do you ever bounce it off people?
Never.
Or does
never.
It kill your confidence? Never.
You know who I bounce it off of? I bounce it off the YouTube audience and the NBA audience and stuff like that. And if – I can't really think of something that I've said that people hated. I'm sure there is. I'm sure – because I don't check the comments that often, but I'm sure there is. I don't – the one thing that I did creatively where I feel like I took a chance was there was a night, I think it was David Bowie passed away. Mm-hmm. And so I basically did a tribute to David Bowie, including song titles in the plays. I think I said something like Iggy Stardust for Andre Iguodala and, just whatever silly thing. But I wanted to like, sort of pay tribute in my own way, and it got picked up a lot. But that's one of those where I knew that something was going to happen. And I knew, somebody's going to say something, and it's either going to be really negative or it's going to be really positive, but I'm going to try it. And actually what happened was I was coaching my nephew, James, in basketball the next day, and we were out in his driveway, and I got a call from Brent Berry. And he's like, you're not going to believe it. You're on Deadspin right now with that David Bowie thing. But when that happens, when you hear that happens, you're like, is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Like, are they killing
you get nervous,
me?
Or
are they liking me? What are they saying? So I went and checked, and they really liked it. And then I think I did it again for George Michael when he passed away. Right. And it's special occasions, maybe Prince. I wasn't working the night. that Prince passed away. So I would have, but I wasn't there.
We were talking about tone before. Have you been watching The Last Dance? I'm assuming so.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Have you liked the tone of that? Like, I think, because it's interesting, because my knowledge of that team, and I was sort of my younger, early pre-teens when the Bulls were playing in 98, but that joy was nothing. That team was nothing but joy internationally, right? We didn't get mm-hmm. the papers. We didn't see the Krauss drama and all that. So then to see this, it take this very different tone that really mirrors that OJ Made in America documentary.
Like yep.
Soundtrack and thing. How do you find the tone of that? Do you find it's the most accurate reflection of the tone of that team? What do you think?
So I was working at Turner Sports when that team was rolling. And so I was obviously much younger in my career and everything like that. But I saw them play. I saw that team play when they came to the Georgia Dome. It was in the documentary.
Yeah, the big game. Yeah.
So I was there. Yeah, and I just think, look, this is a very Michael Jordan is not the Gatorade commercial guy. He's not the friendly smiling guy or whatever. He mm-hmm. is. He's a tough guy. I mean, he's a warrior, and I think that gritty determination and a bit of that harsh edge comes across in that, frankly.
Yeah.
I think it really does. So I think, I love it. I do. I absolutely love what they've done. I know the work that they put into it. I think it could go longer. I'm curious when you say, like, how it hits an international audience. I don't think that American audiences in my age group are surprised because they really knew what was going on, especially, you know, look, the people I deal with in the media knew what was up. So I don't think there's a surprise on that level. But I am sort of worried about that when you said, like, how do you think an international audience is receiving?
Well, first of all, I'll certainly speak from an Australian perspective first and foremost. The lack of Luke Longley is sort of a little bit of a sore spot. Like, oh, okay, would have been nice to have him
sure.
in there at all. Or something. Maybe he's in the next couple of episodes. We don't know. But that's one thing that people lament here. I think... there is an element of surprise, I think, because you just didn't get the level of, you got it all afterwards. Like, you know, I've read Sam Smith's book and did it around about that time or a bit later. So we got a few of those things. But as far as like the general populace, no, you didn't get, the name Jerry Krauss would not have come across many minds. So there has been an element of surprise with this thing. And that's what I think has generated such a an interest in it. I think they've really done a good job of playing the drama. And in our sports media, we've seen a lot of other codes, Aussie rules, football, soccer and things say, oh, well, we should do a last dance of our code. I think the last dance has become more than the title of that season. It's now morphed into sort of like the idea of a documentary that goes behind the scenes. I think like to last dance something is going to kind of become part of the vernacular where it's like,
oh, so it's becoming an archetype.
Yeah, it's like this is going to be the last dance of soccer or last dance of footy.
You said there was a surprise. Tell me, are they surprised at how Jordan treated Jerry Krauss? Is that it?
There's a bit of a surprise that like, oh, hang on, they wanted to break this team up? There was a bit of that surprise. Yeah, and that did come as a bit of surprise to a lot of people. I think also, a new crowd, a new younger people have come to it. And this is sort of just what I've noticed on Twitter, but they seem to be... like really receptive to it and surprised by how good it is. I don't think a lot of people have gone back and watched these games. And so it's good. They just enjoy. Yeah. But enjoyment is the number one thing. For sure.
Well, yeah, getting back to your point on Luke Longley, I do think that's disappointing, honestly. You know, especially now that I have a relationship with Australia and New Zealand and the NBL, I'm disappointed in that. And I'd like to hear his voice involved in it. Because the thing is, I want to hear... You know, we all know what Michael Jordan did. He's the best player of all time, all that, yada, yada, yada. I get it. But mm-hmm. I would love to know so many perspectives on what it was like to play with him, to be with him, to work with him. And particularly, I think it's interesting, you know, the Tony Kukoc part was interesting. I think that international perspective is interesting because if you grew up in America, and probably worldwide, but if you grew up in America, you really knew who Michael Jordan was. Mm. He's separate from every other athlete. And so I think that a player like Steve Kerr knows what he's getting into. But for Luke Longley to get there and, okay, now I'm with Michael Jordan, and Tony Kukoc meets him at the Barcelona Olympics, I think that'd be an interesting perspective. So I am with that. And the Jerry Krause thing is tough for me because it's a case of ego run amok, right?
Do you think the trial's accurate?
I do. I think I hope people understand. There's an article I read that I should have shared on Twitter. It was a long form article on Jerry Krause. So he did some really good things going along, and he just happened to land on the greatest player ever. Yeah. And so, you know, but he wanted some credit for what he was doing, and everybody, and I can't tell you. So look, I still cover the NBA and I've covered other sports. There is not a sport I've ever covered where all the focus in that time just went Jordan. Yeah. Everything just Jordan. Now there's LeBron and there's Steph and there's Giannis and there's, but back then it was just Jordan, 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 Jordan. And so if anybody else wanted any sort of credit, it had to be tough to be around that guy.
Yeah.
So I get the motivation for why Jerry Krause went haywire. But imagine today breaking up that team. I just think and everything, it would never happen.
One thing I want to talk about is with The Last Dance, this is my last question, but the lack of a narrator. You know, like narrators have come in and out of fashion. Now, obviously, like, you know, you're a candidate to do this. Sorry, a lot of people. But, I mean, you saw it with the OJ thing, and there's a 30 for 30. I don't know who makes it, but it is about the OJ thing and how that was going on at the same time as the finals. And that was the sort of first one to not use a narrator and just solely rely on footage, the right footage at the right time, getting you through from scene to scene. Yeah, what do you feel about like the sort of seemingly maybe the death of the narrator? What do you think?
It's tough for a guy like me, but I think
it's the style.
The guy that is, I think it's a popular style, and I think we talked earlier before we were coming on about Nats versus sound on tape. So what they're doing is, so here's Michael Jordan talking. And then it said, and then we went to New York and played the Knicks. And then you come with a sound full of a Knicks announcer saying, the Bulls in town tonight, blah, 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 blah. And that gets you to the next sound bite. And you can tell the story graphically. The Knicks, you know, lose by 4. So it is a style. And what's funny is the executive producer of this stuff is a guy named John Dahl. And way back when, he's the guy that got me into television. So he has really gone on to huge success. He's the guy who put all the 30 for 30 together at ESPN, the Sports Century stuff. All that stuff is John Dahl. I'm thrilled to see what he's been able to do. I don't know that I have a strong opinion one way or the other. I want the story to get told. Yeah. I do. I want it to get told right. And there are times, I think, where you need to write specifically a lead into something. So I think you lose something by not including a narrator. I really do. And so you're having to cheat by telling the story through some form of sound on tape. A lot of times you'll see them have a local anchor telling, last night the Chicago Bulls did blah, blah, blah. And so you're reaching a little bit to me. But, you know, it's a style. It's a choice now. Styles come and go. I'm sure the narrator will come back.
How's COVID going over there? Like where you're at? Like you're still kind of.
I'm in Georgia, so we're among the rough states in America.
Are you locked down?
Yeah. I haven't been to a grocery store or any sort of store since early March. The day that this broke out, the day the NBA shut down, I was the afternoon update anchor on NBA TV, and so my morning starts. I get an email from the producer, Bo. We're going to talk about teams that are going to make the playoffs and teams that are on the cusp. That's the format for my show that morning. By the time I get there to do my first lead-in, Golden State's talking about playing in front of nobody. So we break in with that story. Then later in the day, other teams are starting to do that. I get off my show. I get off my set, and I drive home. By the time I drive home, they're shutting down Oklahoma City's game, and at the end of the night, the NBA shut down. So it happened that fast. I haven't been really out since then. It's tough in Georgia because they're letting people out, but I feel like people don't know what they're getting themselves into. A tough situation. So I don't know. I hope it gets better. I think we're in for a long haul. I'd love to see basketball back. And if the NBA is slow to come back, I think there's an opportunity for the NBL if it's safe there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I haven't shaved since lockdown. So that was about a month ago. And I'm just going to keep it going. Actually, one thing I will say, where do you think the positive from COVID is as far as sports reporting is concerned? Like, obviously, no crowds means that the demand for, but also the chances to mess around with vision is up. You know, do you think this will birth something new or different or interesting? What do you think?
Well, I think it's going to birth an interest in new sports, particularly here in America, because I think we're in for it longer than most people just because of the way we responded. Esports. My company, Turner Sports, is involved with esports. But I think, you know, look, ESPN here in America has started broadcasting Korean baseball. And so now everybody's picking their Korean baseball team. Okay, who's your favorite team? Okay, I'm going with the Kia Tigers. I've never heard of this team in my life, but Kia's an NBA sponsor. Fine, I love Kia. So I'm watching the games because people are desperate. So now what I think happens is if I watch the Korean baseball league for a month or two, hey, I'm sort of interested in this sport. I want to see how this story turns out. And so I think there could be a lingering interest from American fans in other sports leagues that they haven't considered before. And so I think, you know, even I know that the NBL is going through some tough times as far as salaries and stuff like that, players leaving or at least potentially leaving. If they are safe and if they are healthy and they can play basketball ahead of the NBA, people would watch. I think people would love to watch.
I agree. And they'd really force that. Like, you'd probably frame the NBL through your NBA talent or former NBA talent. Your Bogut.
Sure.
Cotton when he was here. But, you know, depending on who's here and what else. I also think when you talk about, like, selling international sports to an American audience, I think what we'll see, perhaps see in this country, is more of a push of the storyline and more of the drama. Less about the actual sport itself, perhaps, but more about the interaction between players, more of an emotion than the X's and O's, perhaps.
You're right. I think there's an opportunity to go back and do some really serious storytelling, and maybe it's led by The Last Dance. I mean, I think there's a realization that, wait, people do want these stories. People do want to go a little more in depth. There was a guy, I worked the Nagano Olympics in Japan, and one of my bosses was a guy named Bob Lanning, who told me, the way I want these features to be is, tell me something I don't know, or tell me in a way I've never heard it before.
Right.
And I think there's an opportunity to do storytelling that way now, into stories that we may have glossed over, that we may not have had the time for, because look, let's be honest, people's attention span is just nothing now. Yeah. And so if your clip is more than a minute long, people are done. I don't have time for that.
It's sort of funny how it goes both ways. Like, it's either really short or really long. Like, Joe Rogan's very popular and his goes 3 hours. There's no middle. There's no 35-minute show anymore. It's big or small.
Yeah, I'll binge watch Tiger King and watch 7-hour episodes in a row. But
I won't watch 3 minutes on the news. Yeah.
Yeah, here's this feature of Giannis going home to Greece and meeting his family and seeing his old teammates. I can't watch that. That's 5 minutes long. It's a weird thing. But here's 30 seconds of Giannis dunking and yelling at people all day. And watch it. You're right. There's that middle space is tough to navigate now.
When you figure it out, Bo, you let me know.
We'll have a little business going, right?
Thanks very much, everyone. And again, remember, rate, review, and subscribe. See you next time.